Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
And welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I am feeling just fine.
Can I ask you a question, Matt? How are your hatches?
Are they battened down? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, are your hatches battened down is what I'm asking you, because people might not know this. But we are recording this as we are. There are flood warnings all over our region. We are hoping for the best, but there's a hurricane on the way.
Well, I guess people will know whether or not we survived by whether this episode goes up or not, I think.
In case we don't, I just want to say, I have always resented you.
Are you saying that to the audience or to me?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I don't resent anybody. We have a really great show for you all this week. Normally we interview a creator, right? Normally we interview a creator about a book they're doing, maybe two books they're doing. We have the creative teams for two comics on this show. We have a party coming up with Joe Keating and Nick Barber, the writer and artist of the upcoming book Ringside, which we're very excited about, and Joe Keating and Layla Del Duca, the creative team of Shudder from Image Comics. We're all just going to be talking to them together. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Look,
stick around.
For the sake of clarity, we are not talking to two Joe Keatings.
It's there's just one Joe Keating.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun to talk to them about Shudder and Ringside, which is a really cool wrestling comic. But Chris, before we get to that, we've got some business to deal with. The first thing we should do is take some pleasure in thanking our newest Patreon supporters.
Now, Matt, are these the people who put us over the limit on our on our very dramatic Every Story Ever episode from last week?
They are the very same. These are people who went to patreon.com/warrocketajax and have pitched in a few bucks every single month to help us out, help us pay the bills, pay those gimmicks in the mail. They keep sending in the mail call bills. Look, I'm not used to doing this part.
I left you out to dry on that, Matt. It's the people who are helping us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail call bills.
That's right. That's what I was trying to say that whole time. And here are those people that helped us do that thing that I couldn't really say. Brendan Roach.
Thank you, Brendan.
Roxy Lonergan.
Oh, thank you, Roxy.
She has a wonderful name.
That is a really great name.
Jack Nylon.
Thank you, Jack.
Alan Byrne.
Thank you, Alan.
Tim Maytom.
Thank you, Tim.
Mark Arsenault.
Thank you, Mark.
Russell Hillman.
Thank you, Russell.
And Benjamin Long.
Thank you, Benjamin.
Those are our newest Patreon supporters. We thank them all very much. If you would like to help us out on Patreon, get some special bonus content and some other cool stuff that is exclusive to Patreon supporters, we've got some art from our pal Kyle Starks, exclusive to Patreon supporters, that's coming out to them very soon.
If you want to hear me lose my sugar over the names of some British candies,
that's right.
Then you need that bonus content in your life.
That's right. We've gotten some great feedback on that particular piece of bonus content. You could go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and throw in a pledge there. If you cannot pledge, if you simply do not have the money, that is okay. We will continue to do the show for free for all our listeners, and we appreciate the act of simply listening to the show. It is a great help just to have the awesome audience that we have. But for those that do help us on Patreon, special thanks to you. All right, Chris, we've thanked our backers. Now it's time to do some checks and wrecks.
Oh, let's do it. So come on,
before you wreck yourself. Chris, what do you have to check in with this week?
Well, we got a couple things that we need to talk about, Matt. And the first and most pressing is that it is the first week of Halloween.
So true. So true.
I am very excited. Halloween, as you will know, is my second favorite month of the year, followed by the 55-day month of Christmas, which begins the day after Halloween. I'm excited. I have yet to put up my directions. I have yet to put up my decorations, but by the time you hear this, I probably would have. I have a wreath. I have a Hallow wreath that I put up. It is a black wreath with glittering skulls. I have window clings. I have orange lights that I put on my balcony. I'm very excited about that. To mark the occasion, you know that we are always big fans of Spooktoberfest, as we like to call it around here. And we have some really cool plans. First of all, we are going to have our usual Halloween visit from Benito Sereno at the end of the month. That's going to be really fun. Matt and I are going to be doing some allegedly scary movies for our sister podcast, Movie Fighters. We have not settled on anything yet, so if you have suggestions, send them in. Otherwise, I'm going to make Matt watch the Resident Evil movies in reverse chronological order.
Two of them. That's all I can take.
Two of them. I think we should, like, I don't think we, like, this is the last episode of the season, right?
The next one, yes.
Yeah, this is going to be the season finale. What if we marathoned them? What if we only did one episode this month and we just straight marathoned 10 hours of Resident Evil movies?
That sounds... Well, that'll take some negotiation to make that happen.
I actually feel like someone else did that.
It was
I may have to
they
look
did.
That up.
That there was a Red Letter Media thing where they watched all the Resident Evil movies back to back.
Okay. We'll figure something out. The other thing, now Matt, this is something I don't think I've even told you yet. I made arrangements today for a very special Halloween visit next week. Here on the show. We do not usually do teasers for the next episode of the show. At the very least, at the beginning of the show. But assuming that the town of Tonopah, Nevada has internet access next week, we are going to have Christopher Sabella calling in live from the Clown Hotel.
Oh my goodness. Now, for our listeners who are not familiar with what Christopher Sabella is doing as a preview for next week, follow him on Twitter right now, because he is doing something that is, I don't know of anyone else who would possibly do it. He is currently in residence at the famous spooky, horrible clown motel.
This is a motel in Nevada that is clown themed. It is full of clown dolls. It's terrifying. And it's next to a graveyard. And he's living there for a month. So we're going to get, like, I love that we're going to get him, like, a week and a half into it. So things are still going to be, like, things are going to be just starting to, like, he is just going to be getting used to the bloodstain on the ceiling at this point when we talk to him. It's very exciting.
Yes. What an amazing thing that will be.
So yeah, that is next week. We have a lot of spooky plans, and if you have spooky things that you want to hear us talk about, or if you have ideas for spooky things on the show, let us know. Spooky every story ever lists, maybe? Spooky quotes? Spooky listener questions? We will do them all. Well, I mean, we're not going to do them all. You're going to cut me off on that one, Matt. I can hear it.
Well, I was going to say we were going to spook it up, but I don't know how much we're going to get spooky.
We're going to get real spooky, and it's going to be a lot of fun, I think. The other thing, I just wanted to a quick follow-up. I have been in contact with the professional MMA fighter and kickboxing trainer who reached out a few weeks ago. And he did say that I could tell you his name if you want to check out what he's writing about comics. He wrote a really, really fun thing about Grant Morrison and J.G. Jones's Marvel Boy, which is a favorite of mine as well. Rashan Sabaratnam, S-A-B-A-R-A-T-N-A-M, is how you spell the last name. I hope I pronounce it right, because he can hurt me. That has become clear. Definitely check him out, and thanks again to him for emailing and having a really great conversation with me.
Send me the link to that I can put it in the show notes.
I will do that very thing. Matt, what have you been up to this week as we celebrate the first week of Halloween?
Well, I did something that isn't terribly Halloween-y, but is very Matt Wilson-y, and that is right before we recorded the show tonight, I went bowling. Now, Chris, have I talked on the show about how much I love bowling?
Don't think you have. It seems like that would be something I would remember, but we've had a lot of conversations over the years, Matt.
We have. Somewhere in the area of 225.
Right. Well, I mean, plus we've had other conversations. Plus we're also friends.
Fair. So maybe 300, right? Anyway, so I went bowling right before the show. I used to go bowling all the time, every week, with our mutual friend Ben Gully. Sometimes my friend Sean Bogus would join in to the bowling. I've bowled a lot in my life, and every time I ever bowl with a new group of people, I have to explain my bowling ball to them.
Okay, I believe we have had this conversation before, but do go on.
I don't know if I've talked about my bowling ball on the show. I have a bowling ball. I bought it at a Salvation Army thrift store. What had to have been going on 15 years ago now. It is a blue 15-pound bowling ball, so it is way too heavy for me, but I use it all the time. I've gotten used to it. It has someone else's initials on it. It has the initials K-E-K on it. I've been using it the entire time I've been bowling, you know, for the past 15 years or so. And its name is Night Shocker 2. Now, the origin of that name is a very insider joke story, where Ben Gully and I were watching TV in my college dorm room. We were watching bowling on ESPN2. And there was this bowler who was in a tournament. I don't even remember his name. But we were watching this bowler in a tournament. He was kind of an older guy. He didn't seem like all that dynamic of a personality. He was just this kind of older pro bowler. And we started making up stories about him. And eventually these stories got to the point where he was having months-long bowling matches with a Shaolin monk, where they would just bowl and bowl and bowl, and it would only end when one of them made a mistake, right? We were coming up with that kind of, like, dumb shit that you have time to come up with when you're in college, right? And we decided that his bowling ball had to have a name. And I decided to make it the most juvenile-sounding name for a bowling ball that anybody would come up with. And I decided it should be called Night Shocker. And we found this to be the funniest thing on earth, that this man in his 50s, who was a professional bowler, would call his ball Night Shocker. So that is why my ball, that is was not mine, was not formed to my fingers, and is way too heavy for me, and has another person's initials on them, is known as Night Shocker 2. And I have to tell that story to everyone I bowl with because they invariably ask, because I always refer to it as Night Shocker 2, almost absent-mindedly. So that is a little story about me for everyone for my check. All right, Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
I'm following up on last week's recommendation because literally all I have done is play Mario Maker this week. I find it very comforting. It helps to, I on the days when I do not manage my anxiety by going to a room painted red and listening to rap music and getting punched in the face, I manage my anxiety by playing Mario Maker. that has become my life now. But I specifically want to talk about some levels that people have made. Matt, you're familiar with Ryan North.
Sure.
He's a friend of the show. He's a friend to everyone, I would say. A friend to humanity, to dinosaurs, to squirrels, to Finn and Jake, to to Midas Flesh.
He's a very tall, generous man.
He is. And he... If I told you that he was really good at making extremely clever and gimmicky Mario levels, would you at all be surprised?
Not even a little bit.
I actually pitched to Andrew Wheeler. I was like, I want to email, like, I want to interview Ryan North about his Mario Maker levels. Because I feel like, being the dinosaur comics reader that I am, Ryan North is a guy who has worked in multiple media, right? He's done comics. He's done a very distinctive webcomic with a visual gimmick. He's written a choose-your-own-adventure novel. He's written a book that is a review of the adaptation of Back to the Future. He's done a lot. He has done a lot. He is approaching Mario Maker with the, like, exactly what you would expect. And I feel like they are levels he has wanted to make for quite some time and never had the way to express them. He made a time travel themed level, which is pretty amazing.
I don't even know how that would work.
It's brilliant. Because what it is it's an auto-scrolling level, right?
Okay.
And at the end of the level is a door that takes you back to the beginning of the level. But the thing is, there's different, well, levels, since there are no synonyms for this. There's different tiers in the stage, and each one is blocked off by a set of bricks on the ground. And so you get the P switch at the end of the level, then go back in time to change the level. And you run through the various tiers of the level, getting the P switch and moving back in time. So time travel themed might be putting it strongly, but it's not putting it so strongly that I don't think that is the best way to describe it. He did one called Choose Your Own Airship Adventure, which is just a really cleverly made airship level with a lot of different ways to get through the stage. There's a lot of different branching, multiple paths and secrets you can get into. He's frustratingly good at it. He's frustratingly good at making Mario levels. And one of the really fun things is that if you're following someone, and I think I'm following Ryan, David Willis, who's also a friend of the show, Ross May, who I believe is a listener of the show, and someone else. Gitter404, who's also a listener of the show. I believe I am following on there as well. You can go see the people you're following, the levels they like, the levels they've like left stars on. And if you go into what Ryan North has starred, it is also very typically clever level designs. There's one in which you play as a Goomba, and it's a very weird and very kind of trippy stage. I think it's just called Goomba, A Sad Tale of Madness. And you go through this level where all of these Goombas are just walking into lava, and there's a giant Mario that is made out of bricks. And then you go through a pipe and you're in a ghost house style level. And it's World 1-1 that you're moving through in reverse with ghosts in place of all the enemies. So you are going through as a Goomba. You are going in reverse through World 1-1 after Mario has killed everything in that level.
That is dark and also could be the most popular, revered, critically acclaimed indie game of the year.
Oh, like, the things that people are making with Mario Maker that are kind of like indie games are great because they're always half parody.
Yeah.
The same guy who made that, I wish I could remember his name, but the same guy who made that made one called Lakitu, A Tale of Friendship. And one of the little cool little aspects of the game is that if you have a Lakitu, by default, it will drop Spinies. But you can drag any other item or enemy on it and make it drop that instead. So you go through this level, and there's a Lakitu above you, and in coins it spells out FRIEND, and there's a smiley face in coins, and that Lakitu throws you a power-up. And then you go into a little room, you know, you go through a door and you're in the next room, and the coins spell out HOP, and the Lakitu throws out a springboard, and you go to the next one, and it says USE, and the Lakitu throws out a super leaf that you can use to break the bricks and get to the next door. And then Bowser kills the Lakitu. The Lakitu gets killed. And then you have the, like, you go to a thing where in coins it spells out RIP, and it's a grave with a cloud on it. And then you have the option to seek revenge or to meet Lakitu in the afterlife. Mario Maker's great, everybody. Mario Maker is great and brilliant. If you are on Mario Maker, if you have stages that you would like me to play, I know typing out those codes is a hassle, but please, please send them in. Email us at WarRocketAjax or hit me up on Tumblr or Twitter. I would love to play your Mario Maker stages, so please, please send those to us. And I will probably continue talking about that game until I break down and buy Fallout 4. So, Matt, what is your recommendation this week?
My recommendation is a show that everyone has heard of, and if they have an interest in watching it, they've probably watched it, but it is the show that my wife and I have decided is the thing we watch over dinner now. And it is the only show that I can recall actually, like, getting on a laptop, like, opening up a laptop and playing it on a player, like, on a computer instead of just watching it on Hulu on my TV that I'm willing to do that with. And it is The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. It's the new CBS Late Show that Stephen Colbert hosts. It is wonderful. I think Colbert is, you know, he has shed the character version of Stephen Colbert in a way that doesn't make him a wholly different presence on television, but sort of gives him a little more honesty. But the format of the show is somewhat similar to the Colbert Report. So he is so clearly comfortable with this show and keeping it moving along. Like, there are so few bumps in these first few weeks of shows that it's remarkable. Because, like, I remember, like, Jimmy Fallon's first few shows, or, you know, any late night host's first few shows, Seth Meyers, or, like, the new Daily Show host Trevor Noah started this week, and his first show was a very bumpy ride. And it's just seeing Colbert being so comfortable in that role is really cool. And I should also mention that someone who has been on this show before and is a friend of the show, a friend of mine, somebody who I've talked to on this very air, is now a writer on Late Show with Stephen Colbert, Daniel Cable Smith. I am waiting for him to show up on the show, like writers on late night shows do sometimes, as just like a random audience member or somebody who shows up in a skit or somewhere. I'm just waiting to be like, I know that guy, as I watch The Late Show. So, it's very exciting. As Marlene and I were on vacation in the UK, I Instagrammed a photo from there, and Daniel put a comment on that Instagram that said, like, living vicariously through this trip. And I have absolutely been living vicariously through him being a writer on The Late Show, because I've always had, like, a weird thing where I thought I could have been a writer on, like, a late night talk show or a comedy show. But I get to live vicariously through Daniel. So, the show is really good, and I know a guy who writes for it. So I guess take my recommendation with a grain of salt, but I really like it. We've been watching it every night. And one thing I really like about it is the format that has been set up is that the first guest is a celebrity who is in movies, but then the second guest is somebody who I would call a newsmaker, like somebody who isn't necessarily like a Hollywood person or an actor, another actor, or even a comedian. It's somebody who's in the news and that Colbert is talking to about, like, something that is, you know, relevant to the world. Like, maybe the biggest sort of celebrity of that type that he's had, or the newsmaker that is the biggest celebrity, was Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple. But the one combination that was really funny was the night that he had on Donald Trump, he also had on the U.S. Secretary of Energy, Ernest Moniz. And they even had like a little back and forth, even though they weren't on stage at the same time. As guests, they had a little back and forth, which was really, really cool. So yeah, if you haven't watched The Late Show and you've been curious about it, it's good. It's the best late night talk show.
I did watch the first episode of The Late Show, and I did enjoy it. And like you said, it's interesting to see, after seeing Stephen Colbert playing the character Stephen Colbert for so long, seeing him subtly moving away from it was really interesting. I do still really miss Craig Ferguson. I miss the weirdness of his show in a way that, like, a thing like The Tonight Show and a thing like The Late Show can never really be. And even the, you know,
the 12:35 shows?
Yeah, the 12:35 shows. That most of them are not, because it wasn't just that there was a skeleton robot, and it wasn't just that there was a horse costume involved, but the people showing up for that show knew when it was on, and so nobody acted like they were being interviewed ever. Like, everybody just acted like they were hanging out, which was a really cool thing. Like, there was a really good episode of The Best Show that had Jack Black on as an interview, and Jack Black was very obviously there to promote Goosebumps, but could not have been less interested in actually talking about it. He just wanted to talk about all this other stuff. And that's the kind of thing that I really miss on TV. So I feel like it's not that I disliked the show at all. I actually really enjoyed it, but I can't muster up the excitement for late night TV.
Sure. I'll say this, and this will be the last thing I say about The Late Show. My favorite holdover from the Colbert Report that Colbert is still doing on The Late Show is that he's just in the comedy segments and the pre-interview, just funny segments, he's constantly eating. He's always eating at the desk. Like, he's got like a bag of Oreos or whatever in front of him. And there's just so much comedy value in Colbert just like stuffing food in his face while he's trying to do a comedy bit. I loved that on the Colbert Report, and I love it on the Late Show. All right, those are our recommendations. Chris, let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week. Chris, do you want to start with Batman Annual number 4?
Yes. This is annual week, apparently, because a lot of annuals came out this week.
At least for DC, yeah.
Well, we had the Batman Annual, the Grayson Annual, the Gem Annual, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. So I feel like it went across the board.
That's fair.
But first up, I really want to talk about the Batman Annual. This is Batman Annual number 4 by James Tynion IV, and I hope I am pronouncing this correctly. Roge Antonio. It's Roge Antonio doing the art, who is very, very good.
This book has a stunning cover by Sean Murphy. The cover looks great.
Yes, it's a very, very eye-catching cover that has nothing to do with the interior, but it's beautiful. And it is a kind of cap or a coda to Arkham Manor and the idea of Arkham Manor. Jerry Powers, who is a knight, like, I really do like when they bring in stuff that's going to happen in the future in a weird way, like the way that the Powers Corporation has bought all of the Wayne Corporation's holdings, because in Batman Beyond it was Wayne Powers. So Jerry Powers has bought Wayne Manor back from Gotham City after it was used as the new temporary location of Arkham, and has given it back to Bruce Wayne. And so the story is all about the idea of trying to re-retrofit Wayne Manor back into Wayne Manor, except that when Bruce Wayne and Jerry Powers and Alfred and Julie Madison go in, they find that they are trapped by the last three criminals in Arkham Manor, who are the Riddler, Mr. Freeze, and Clayface. And there's a really interesting thing, because it teases the idea that they know who Bruce Wayne is, or rather who he was, because they are putting him essentially through a house full of death traps, which you know I love, in order to get him to answer the Riddler's question, which is, what are you? And the way that it plays out is really, really good and really interesting and really revealing. It plays with the idea of what Bruce Wayne would be like if he didn't remember anything about his past, in that you get to see Bruce Wayne use a gun at one point, and it doesn't feel, like, super weird. Because, like, it's played as a big moment, but it doesn't feel like it's a betrayal of the character. You get to see Alfred explaining why he has an armory in the house. And you get, like, again, an amnesiac Batman going through a Wayne Manor that is full of death traps. And that is really, really fun. And it's a nice ending of the Arkham Manor idea, which I actually really liked. And I thought it didn't get as much of a chance as it should have. It ended up only being that 6-issue series. Which was very good, I thought. So even if you haven't read that, I don't think you need it going in. But if you did read Arkham Manor and you enjoyed it, this makes for a really fun cap to that story. It does. There is one part that gets like a little dark when the Riddler reveals all the scars that he has from fighting Batman. But also I kind of believe that the Riddler would have a lot of scars from fighting Batman because he's the Riddler. So, I don't know. It's getting to see how the people in Gotham City, not even the people of Gotham City, but the arch criminals, getting to see how they view Bruce Wayne with the knowledge that he was funding Batman is really, really interesting. So, definitely check that one out. I read the Grayson Annual this week as well, and that's also fun. But this is the one that I would say definitely... Add it to your list if you're not a usual annual purchaser.
It's nice that Arkham Manor got a little send off there, in that.
Yeah, it gets some storyline closure, which is nice.
All right, the next book that you wanted to talk about, Chris, was Jim Annual Number 1.
Yes, this is a book by a friend of the show, Kelly Thompson, with art by Amy Meberson, Ariel Jovellanos, Rebecca Isaacs, and Jen Bartel and Agnes Garbowska, as well as some previously in Gem art by Sophie Campbell. I love Gem. I think it's great. and I love stories that are kind of, you know, calm breaks in the action. And this is right up my alley. It's Jem and the Holograms coming home the night of their first concert, immediately falling asleep while they're watching movies and having dreams based on all their movies. So Jem has a dream that is inspired by Teen Wolf, where she's very angsty. Like, instead of turning into a werewolf, she turns into a Jem Wolf, which is Jem as a werewolf playing basketball. That, mark it down, that is another Betty Felon appearance. She's in there.
She's really racking up the points on this. On this appearance.
She is. I want the full list. There's a story about Aja that is inspired by Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. That's a lot of fun and weird. There is a... Shayna's story is based on The Empire Strikes Back. And Kimber's story is a Muppet Babies parody. And what's really interesting about it, it's very subtle, and I don't know if I would have been able to pick it out if I hadn't seen someone mention it to Kelly Thompson on her Tumblr. But Synergy, in all the dream sequences, has a... like, she coughs during her dialogue. Because Synergy shows up, she's Nanny in the Muppet Babies parody. She is in the Tina Turner role in the Beyond Thunderdome parody. There's a cough in her voice. Like, she has to take a moment, and it's never highlighted and it's never explained. But Spoiler warning for the original Gem cartoon from 30 years ago. Synergy was based on Jerrica's dead mother. Like, her appearance and her, like, speech patterns and her brain patterns were based on Jerrica's mother who died. So I think this is a reference to the characters in their dreams hearing Synergy as someone who is sick. Which, if I'm right about that, and I have not asked Kelly about that, and I don't know if that's where it's going, but that's like a really, it's an interesting touch, and it's a really sad one.
It's also really subtle storytelling.
Yes, because that has not even been touched on yet. Like, what Synergy is and where Synergy comes from has not even been mentioned in the series so far, other than that she's a supercomputer who projects holograms. I might be misreading that, and I might be completely wrong in that, but if that's what it is, that is a nice, subtle, and kind of heartbreaking once you realize it touch. So I am probably going to email Kelly after we finish recording tonight to see if I'm right. But yeah, very, very good. A fantastic artist showcase. Some really great artists working on this one. Definitely, definitely check it out. And obviously, Gem and the Holograms, the ongoing, is one of my favorite books.
The last comic that I'm going to talk about for a little bit is a book, a brand new Image series called From Under Mountains. The first issue came out this week. It's got art and colors by Sloan Leong, story and script by Claire Gibson, and story also by Marion Churchland, who did the cover art. If I have a complaint about this book, it's that the story is almost too big for a single issue of comics. That said, there is a huge, like, first issue moment that happens in this particular issue that is an amazingly good hook. It's also such a wide-ranging story because it starts with a shamanistic summoning. It checks in with a class of royals or nobles who are sort of the governing family of a region. The last two pages of this, it's a big fantasy story, okay? You know that because the last two pages of the actual comic are a map of the lands and what they encompass. But we get a check-in with this governing family of this one particular region. We get a check-in with some of the lower classes. We get a check-in with the merchant classes. We get this like group of magic users that live sort of outside of the society at large. There is so much happening in this book. And if I was going to kind of reduce it to an elevator pitch, it's sort of Game of Thrones for comics. It's not Game of Thrones. And there's already been a comics adaptation of Game of Thrones or a comics version of Game of Thrones. This is not that. It doesn't exactly totally have the feel of Game of Thrones. And it's got a whole different set of characters and a whole different setting and sort of a whole different feel to it. But it's that same kind of storytelling where we're bouncing around between these different characters that we're keeping tabs on in this huge world of fantasy adventure. And it is so ambitious just in this first issue. It is so ambitious, so compelling, so interesting. The art is gorgeous. There is so much to like about it. But I kind of want to read it all in one big go, because I feel like all I've gotten in this first issue is sort of breadcrumbs. Like, I barely have a grasp on who the characters are. I feel like if there's going to be, you know, if you're going to get a criticism for your comic, the best one to get is, why didn't I get more right away? But that's really how I feel about it. I'm so interested in seeing more and learning more about these characters in this setting. Once again, it is called From Under Mountains. If you did not check it out, I think it is 100% worth your time. The world that it is based in is called Akkar. It just looks so cool. And it's like, I'm already so intrigued by the different areas of the map. Like, there's an area of the map that's just called the Throat. And I want to see people traveling through the Throat, right? Because that's got to be an interesting place. there's already a feel of history. There's already a feel of, you know, so much backstory. I'm enamored with where I hope this book is going and what little I've seen so far in just the one issue. All right, Chris, that is our comic segment. Let's get into our interview segment. We've got an absolutely full house with Layla Del Duca, Nick Barber, and Joe Keating.
Joining us for the program this week, we have a Skype party going on, everybody. We have a packed house for this episode of War Rocket Ajax. We have here to talk to us about Shudder and the upcoming book Ringside, which I think we're all very excited about. We have Joe Keating, we have Layla Del Duca, and we have Nick Barber, all the way from New Zealand, coming in. So if this episode sounds a little shaky, that's not us. That is Skype. We're doing our best, everybody. Guys, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you. Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Joe and Nick, I've been waiting, maybe not you, Nick, because I think this is actually the first time we've talked to each other, but Joe, I've been waiting for you to do a wrestling comic for about 3 years. Like, I've been waiting for that to happen.
Yeah, well, I've had the idea for a really long time. I've been waiting for about 5 years, almost 6 years at this point. It's pretty crazy. Because, I initially had the idea for Ringside in 2009 or 2010, I don't remember, somewhere around there. And then it just went through all sorts of versions and was like pitched to pretty much every single publisher that you could pitch it to. Like Image said no, then Skybound said no, then Dark Horse, then Oni, then Vertigo, who actually really wanted to do it, but then I guess the higher-ups were like, nope. I don't know how that really worked out. And then I met Nick through the internet, and I was like, oh, that's what's missing. And it totally was. And then so now it's like a thing. Now it exists.
I think one of the things that we talked about before we started recording was that Ringside, you were nice enough to provide us with a preview of the first issue. And I don't want to spoil anything because I know people are going to want to go into this and enjoy the story as it is, which I will say, I really like this first issue. It really grabbed me in a lot of different ways. Specifically, that there is a guy who looks exactly like Michael P.S. Hayes. That's all I really need to get into a comic, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that guy looks like Michael Hayes.
Are you Matt P.S. Wilson? Are you pretty sure about that?
Yeah.
That was unintentional for us. I don't know. Nick, did you look at him at all?
No. I've actually been asked that before by somebody, but no. Actually, it was kind of just a amalgamation of different people, like in my head. But I think maybe that's coming through the coloring. I'm not sure, but definitely wasn't intentional.
I think it's that he's an older wrestler with the long blonde hair and the like completely mismatched color goatee. Like the very dark goatee and the long blonde hair.
Yeah. That's kind of a Hogan thing too though, that like jet black, you know, like when he was like Hollywood Hogan, yeah, that jet black kind of thing and like just I don't know. It's a nice contrast, so
I gotta say, I'm glad that we made it, like 4 minutes into this interview before the phrase Hollywood Hulk Hogan was brought up.
It's not gonna be the first time.
That might not be the first time we've said it on this episode by the time this interview rolls around.
It's not gonna be the last time, I should have said.
I know what you meant, Nick. I know what you meant. I do want to get back to what I was saying earlier, but since we're on the subject, like, were there any specific wrestlers that you looked at? Because reading it, I kept thinking that Dan is the main character, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, for now.
Well, in this issue at least, he has like a very kind of Bruce Willis-y feel, and then Michael P.S. Hayes picks his phone up.
Yeah.
Were there wrestlers that you looked at for kind of visual inspiration on this?
Not really. Like, I think that, I guess there's definitely a Bruce Willis quality to Dan, for sure. Like that sort of weathered, you know, older kind of guy who's still kind of in shape, but, you know, their better days have been before them. But I don't know. It definitely wasn't intentional. Maybe unintentional. Maybe it was like a subconscious thing where I'm just a huge Bruce Willis fan, you know?
Yeah, so getting back to what I was saying, it is... I said before we started recording that I was going into it thinking this was going to be a full-on, just pure pro-wrestling comic. And I was really actually kind of surprised by the way that it played out. And again, I don't want to spoil anything. So, Joe, yeah. Nick, I'll let you guys kind of take over from there to talk about a little bit about the story and how it came about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it very much is, in the big picture, long game, pro wrestling comic in that regard, but also it's like it's not the same time, which is kind of dumb and to say. And in my brain, it makes more sense. I think it does in actual words. But the idea is more or less how does, like, in this industry, like this structure that is like built by people, like how does the relationships kind of play out on different ends of it, you know? So like even as it goes on, like it'll be stuff that's like really, really involved. With wrestling, there'll be stuff that's like very remotely involved. Characters will kind of interchange, and you know, some will be wrestlers, some of them won't. Like, especially in the second arc, you really actually get away from just the like, oh, it's a wrestler going about his day, you know. And as it goes on, there are two characters in the first arc who are like, that's pretty much their whole gig, but it's not so much, I mean, not to be cliche with the tagline, but it really is about like what takes place outside the ring and like outside of it. And, like, you know, how does this thing, you know, affect people all over the world and like develop relationships maybe they're not even aware of. I mean, we kind of do that with Shudder in a way, in that it was like advertised as this you know, world adventurer book, and it's really more about how does that stuff like affect people, you know. I guess I just like doing books that seem about one thing but aren't. I don't know. Like, there's no cameras in Shudder. I don't know. Sorry.
Now, Joe, I do want to follow up on that. Yeah. But can I just real quick? Can I pitch you something? Can I throw an idea out at you and see what you think of it?
Well, all right, Nick. All right, yeah. All right. Listen.
Nick, you might want to get your sketch pad. Layla, you might want to take a shot at doing some designs. What if you do, like, maybe the, like, it sounds like you got the first and second arc pretty much set. What if that third arc is about, like, two guys who have a podcast, and it's supposed to be about comics, but they usually just end up talking about pro wrestling for a couple hours every week?
Oh my god, you guys could call it War Rocket Ajax, am I right?
Yes.
You're correct.
Listen, I actually have Matt Wilson's likeness rights because of it's complicated how I got those, but I am willing to deal with you.
I don't think that statement's legally admissible. I'm going to talk to my attorneys about that. But Joe, I want to ask you about some of the dialogue in ringside.
Yeah.
Because now look, I don't hang out with pro wrestlers. I don't talk to them on a daily basis, but I listen to my share of podcasts and I hear the way that wrestlers talk to each other by listening to podcasts. Yeah. I would invite anyone listening to this right now who enjoys pro wrestling to go listen to the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast with Jake the Snake Roberts.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to hear the most insider wrestling talking, like, they talk for 15 minutes about blading and how to pick a blade and where to put it and all kinds of, it's great. Anyway, there are certain phrases in here, certain ways that these wrestlers, these characters talk to each other. That at least in my experience rings very true. There's a conversation, and let me know if I'm giving anything away, but there's a conversation where the first thing that is said is to a young wrestler is, are you saving your money? Which is what I've heard so many times is what older wrestlers say to younger wrestlers so much. Where did you kind of pick up that wrestler lingo? like, how did you get an ear for that kind of talk? And did you show this book to anybody to say, like, is the dialogue right? Are they talking, you know, the way wrestlers talk to each other?
There's kind of a few things with this, because it's, you know, I love professional wrestling. I mean, Chris and I have talked about this. Like, I've been into wrestling since I was a child. You know, it's like never stopped. I've gone through different phases with it, and, you know, sometimes I'm more into, you know, WWE than I'm more into, you know, the indie scene or whatever. But, you know, it always goes into phases. So I guess the initial phase was like, okay, I was in the superstar era, and then I kind of was like really in the Attitude era. But through Attitude era, I got in the Mick Foley big time, and he's like my favorite wrestler of all time. And through him, just because he was the first guy who I noticed who was talking very brutally honestly about just the life, right? And, you know, and that led to stuff like, you know, Beyond the Mat and, you know, his own book. And it changed a lot of perspectives for me, especially the more I actually worked in comics and started seeing a lot of correlations between the two. You know, pretty much everyone in comics, in a creative standpoint, is contracted. Pretty much everyone in comics needs to be concerned about saving their money. And so it was a combination of, well, three things, I guess. It's the lifetime of loving it. Two, I believe you have to do a ton of research for the book, for anything you do. And the purpose of research isn't to show off your research. The purpose of research is to be able to understand and empathize with these people, right? So it's a tricky thing, because you don't want to make it too much lingo heavy, because if you do, then it alienates people. And my hope is people who aren't in the wrestling read this book, you know, as well as people who love wrestling, and that they'll both get something out of it. And so, yeah, there was a ton of research. But three is also just like, the more I would research wrestling, the more correlations I'd see with what the life that, you know, the history of comics and, you know, how we've cared for the older creators and, you know, how people handle their stuff. And I mean, it's not just comics, you know, in prose or whatever, you know, I mean, any sort of art form. And I don't know, just the, it plays off on a much, and this is kind of a huge tangent, but as Nick and Layla will confirm, that's kind of how I talk. But like, for instance, like in wrestling, one of the people who I admire the most is Adam Copeland, the Edge. And when he had to retire at age, 37, and this is what he's loved his whole life. And, like, you know, there's pictures of him in the stand as a kid just loving this thing. And, you know, he trained his whole life. And then one day he's just told, if you keep doing this, your neck's going to basically break forever. I mean, it already broke. And then it was fixed up as much as it could be fixed up. And then, yeah. So I'm just like, and it really struck me, because I was just like, can you imagine there's this one thing you love in life and you're told that's over for you at such an early age, you know? And just a lot of like, the more I'd research wrestling, I'd hear a lot of wrestlers who are just like, I've got nothing else. This is what I do. And I talk to a lot of creators and writers and artists, and it's like, this is what I want. This is it. This is what I've got, you know? And so it's just like, I mean, they're very different industries in a lot of ways, but also like, there's a lot that you can empathize with there. So yeah, it's a combination of all that. The second arc, which I can't really want to get into why yet. I do want to be talking to more wrestlers than I have, because it's, how do I say it? I don't know. It's just something I really, 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 really have to get right, or it'll super mess it up. But I don't know. So yeah, it's kind of a combination of all those things. And it means a lot. Like I was actually like really nervous to hear what you guys thought. Because I know Chris really loves this, and I know like you were, you know, you're saying like, oh, you know, you're not as predisposed to like it, but yeah. So it's been a relief. Also, you guys and Aubrey Sederson from Straight Shoot, I was like, oh man, I hope he likes it. And he actually gave us a quote for the preview that's in Walking Dead. So I'm like, I'm really relieved. I'm just relieved.
Well, I mean, Joe, like, you know that we're fans of yours. Like, we like your stuff a lot.
Thanks, man.
It was only a couple weeks ago that we had Mike Kingston on talking about Headlocked. And one of the things that I brought up when we talked to him is that there is something that is very universal about that idea of, you know, the thing you talked about with Edge, of having this thing that you want to do, and it's the only thing that you want to do that's kind of, you know, universal across all artistic pursuits. Because, you know, pro wrestling is an artistic pursuit. It's performance. Yeah. It's athletics. But, you know, writing and art do not have a much smaller chance of like destroying your neck.
Yeah, but like, it has a very real, I mean, Lalik, I don't know, artists can really I know some older artists in their 50s who are like, their hand is just, I mean, fucked forever. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, I was going to make the argument that there's a more immediate risk of injury in wrestling for sure, even though Joe's absolutely correct.
Well, yes. I mean, obviously you're not going to like break your neck at the art table. At least I'd hope not. But like, there is this, I mean, there's a lot of these old guys, man, like I don't want to get too into it because it's kind of a depressing topic, but like, I'm really into Wally Wood. I'm really into Wally Wood, and he's one of the greatest artists this industry has ever seen. And like, look, he kind of went into it with some mental stuff, but like, I don't know that it helped. And he was pretty broken down, you know? So it's like, it's weird. I mean, it's not just comics. I mean, it's really any sort of artistic pursuit or anything you do. And granted, yes, like I even said earlier, the physical manifestation is much more immediate and in a certain sort of sense, grandiose, I guess, in wrestling. But there's still this correlation between what you're willing to give for your art and the cost of that. And like, how far are you willing to go for that? And what happens when it says you're not wanted or like when you just can't do it anymore, you know? I'm trying to think of which artist it was. I think John Tobleton, maybe, who did Swamp Thing. I could be wrong. Who's like, he's just blind now, you know? And granted, it's not becoming, I'm not probably looking closely at a piece of Bristol for years and help, you know, but it's crazy. Cause it's like, again, he was one of the most brilliant artists. I love his stuff. And then it's just like, all right, you're blind now. Like, it's over.
Well, I'm glad this is turning into our cheeriest episode. I'm glad, all right, I'm gonna, here to have a good time.
Guys. I'm going to steer the car in a different direction.
Well, no, but it's so inspiring because, like, again, with Adam Copeland, when that stuff happened, A, he's still in it as much as possible, you know what I mean? And it was just like, all right, this is all the time you have. You should do this thing that you love, right? And you should put everything you have into it because it could totally just go away tomorrow. And to me, that's totally inspiring, like really invigorating, you know? And so whether it's wrestling or comics or painting or music or whatever you're doing, you know, like that to me, that's actually like a cheery thing. But I get it. Like, I don't want to bring it down too much. But again, I think it has a good side too.
I want to talk about, Joe, you mentioned after I asked about the dialogue, you mentioned research and doing research. Yeah. I would love to hear about, and you know, this is for you, Nick, also. I would love to hear about what your research materials are, like what you go to for that research. And Nick, like there's so many panels throughout this book of you know, people doing wrestling moves. There's a huge, gorgeous two-page spread of you know, the ring and moves happening within that ring. Where do you go to find, you know, either reference material for the art or in your case, Joe, you know, just stuff to research to get in the heads of these people.
I watch a lot of Total Divas on the E channel. I watched about four seasons of it, but, I don't know, like all over the place, like, we've got a lot of old WrestleMania DVDs, things like that. For a particular move, like I'll just Google image search because I get really paranoid about like screwing it up and drawing it wrong. You know, like it's I'm going to get a lot of heat if things aren't quite right. But at the same time, I don't want to say I don't care, but I'm not that guy. I'm not like the detail oriented guy that like if I draw the laces on a boot wrong or something like that, I'm not going to be losing sleep over it, if you know what I mean. Like it's not that type of a comic and that's not really where my interests lie. So like I'm not too research heavy as much as I need to be to tell the story, but I don't really get too bogged down in that stuff, like in the tiny details. That's not really my, I mean, you can tell from looking at my art that's not really that important for me. It's kind of like more just, yeah, telling the story, getting the acting right, getting the kind of feel right, the tone, all of that stuff. Not so much like costume details or little things like that.
Yeah, for me, you know, I mentioned a few things already, like going back to Foley's book. There's actually like, it's kind of like this great I think the term like golden age is overused, but there's so much great stuff out there about wrestling. You know, Dave Schumacher, I think, is one of the greatest writers about it. Really like this book, Squared Circle. As Matt mentioned earlier, there's like this huge breadth of podcasts, and, you know, like Colt Cabana's, I think, is still, let alone, is amazing art of wrestling. Some of it just comes naturally into, like, you know, with all my image stuff, it's all like stuff I'm really passionate about this thing, so I want to write about it, you know? So a lot of it does come out of, like, I've been kind of researching this for years intentionally, you know, and then very intentionally as it became like a real thing. But yeah, as I was saying earlier, you know, really with what's coming up, I've already kind of reached out to a few people, but reaching out to more people who are in it, because again, you can do as much research as you want, like create as much empathy as you can get, but it's like, you know, it's different until you're actually there. And yeah, I go to shows all the time. We've got a lot of great Portland wrestling, DOA, and, you know, I've been going to WWE shows. It's been a while for that since I can make it, but, you know, living, I guess.
Now, we've been talking a lot about Ringside, but obviously we also have Lila Del Duca here, and we would be remiss if we did not talk about Shudder, which is a fantastic comic. And there's something that I wanted to bring up, and this might be a bit of a sore subject. So feel free to shut me down on this one, and we will talk about something else. I wanted to kind of refresh myself about Shudder, so I went looking, and I found an amazing review on NPR.
Oh, yeah.
That it is referred to as the first postmodern adventure comic, which is some pretty high praise. It's a glowing review that talks a lot about what made that first volume so great. And then in the comments section of this NPR article, somebody comes in, it's the first comment, and the comment is just, Rush Limbaugh has better books, NPR won't even talk about them.
I remember that.
And then another guy comes in and says, this is a waste of time. Get a life. Go outside and live for real. Grow a garden and help your neighbor. And then, if I am reading this correctly.
And you are. It's amazing. I'm so excited for this to be revealed to the internet. Anyway, go on.
Layla, your mom comes in.
Yeah. Amazing.
And just shuts down this discussion.
She totally did. I can't believe her. She's obsessed.
Yeah, like, that's great. Like, that is so great.
I know. She said the nicest things, and she was, like, super on point and level-headed about it. She wasn't like, why don't you go make a garden for yourself? It was more, like, a really educated-sounding critique on the book. And anyway, it was super nice of her. I love her.
So I like, how did that, like did you get a phone call of like, have you seen these two jerks on this NPR article? Or did you
I sent the link to the NPR article to my immediate family, because I was like, holy crap, we got reviewed by NPR, and it was kind of huge for me and my family. So they all read it, and I'm sure my mom just scrolled down and saw the two naysayers and took the time out on her own to tell them off, and yeah, or not even tell them off, just like be smart. She left a smart argument.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's very obviously angry, but it's a very controlled.
Yeah. I didn't whine to her or anything. She did that on her own accord.
The phrase, my daughter worked very hard, is an
iconic. Layla, has your mom moonlighting as the internet police? Is she?
Well, yeah, she's been doing this for years now. And I'm sorry to out you, Mom, but yeah, she is the internet police.
Nick, will your mom defend Ringside with the same honor
and
vigor?
She will.
Yeah, I'll just have to set her up with a login so that she can log in and comment on any, you know, any threads that might be active.
Yeah, awesome. I'll let her know.
I love that, because it was just a very, like, it was a very fun thing to, like, read this great little review, because If people haven't seen it, this NPR review, the latest comment is shown first underneath it. So the first thing you see is Layla's mom coming in. And then you go down and see the guy who wants to know why NPR isn't reviewing Rush Limbaugh's books.
I'm a little confused about growing a garden and help your neighbor. Is that supposed to be an insult or is that someone's response to the initial comment?
No, I think that's just life advice. Like, I mean, like,
it's not bad advice. You know?
Yeah, like,
Let's be reasonable here.
My girlfriend is fond of telling people to go drink a glass of water and do a push-up.
Again, good advice. I thought maybe it was an American thing, like, go grow a garden, you know? Like, get out.
We should start that.
You can start busting that out and tell your friends that it is an American saying.
I might get it started.
Hey, buddy, why don't you go grow a garden?
Hey, buddy, yeah. It's got to be buddy, definitely.
It looks like we have the title of the podcast episode.
Yep. Thank you for pointing that out, Joe. You are 100% correct.
You could also call it Rush Limbaugh Has Better Books.
I don't think we want the traffic that Google search will bring. But, so, Layla, aside from that, well, first of all, I want to know if your mom will guest on War Rocket Ajax.
I have no idea. She probably wouldn't because she's so behind in technology, which you wouldn't assume from her response on NPR, but I don't even think she has a computer with a microphone on it.
I'm saying she should start her own podcast where people read out internet comments to her and she shuts them down.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. Like, I would love to see the comics equivalent of, like, mean tweets where it's just creators' mothers reading what people have said about their children online.
Oh, my God.
Nick, I think you just made that a terrible idea. I think you just made that the worst possible idea.
I'm with Nick on this one.
Yeah, me too. I think that'd be hilarious. That'd be so funny.
All right, we'll get our moms on it.
So,
yeah. We're watching Ajax special.
So beyond that, though, Layla, like, what has the experience of drawing Shudder been like? Because you've done a couple of books. I know you did something for Action Lab as well.
No.
No?
No. My book that I draw with Eric Taylor, called The Pantheon Project, we were about to have it published by Action Lab, but we decided to just self-publish it instead in a smaller run, and... Yeah, but besides that, what was the question?
Oh, I was just going to ask, like, Shudder was certainly the first book where I really became aware of your work, and it's great. It's absolutely phenomenal stuff. And I was wondering, like, beyond that specific instance of your mom literally having to come in to yell at these guys, what has the experience been like of having that book and having it be, as far as I know, very well received.
Thank you. Working on Shudder and Dream Come True, it's awesome. Like, the response has been amazing. I love working with Joe. He's a marvelous writer, and his imagination is incredible. I love what he makes me draw, and the response for this has been amazing. I had no idea that people would dig my work this much, and it was really cool to have an immediate audience being signed on with Image because they automatically market for you, and the Image is a very respected publisher, so it was nice to be published by them with a co-creator who really respected me and had me along for the ride completely. Like, he wouldn't take interviews if I wasn't with him for that, which was a really huge step in people getting to know me, I think, and my art. So thanks, Joe, for doing that again. It's just been super cool. This is my life rocks in a large part to Shudder and how I can draw it every day, and it's super fun.
Well, that is very exciting to hear. I'm very glad. I am glad that your mom can bask in the praise now. That is a good thing, and you as well. But I think that brings our regular interview section to an end on this episode. I think it is time that we kick it over to our friends on Twitter to see what they have to ask you. Matt, if our listeners would like to get in on the interviews that we do each and every week here on the show, how can they go about that?
If they want to get into this business, one thing I always tell them, save your money. Don't go around spending your money all over the place, all right? Because you can either make money or you can be friends with the boys in the back, all right? And I'm saying you might want to make money, and you got to save that money because it can go away real quick. Another thing they ought to do is go to twitter.com, sign up for an account, wait until Thursday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, at 6:30 Pacific. And then Matt D. Wilson, the Matt D. Wilson on Twitter, or Chris Sims, the ISB on Twitter, will put out the call for questions. And that is when they will have the opportunity to hear questions and ask questions to our guests, like the ones they are about to hear for Joe, Nick, and Layla. And the first one we have comes from Kevin Chiet. And this is a wrestling question, but whoever would like to answer it may. What are some of your favorite bad gimmicks? And without giving anything away about Ringside, there's a little bit about a bad gimmick in that book, it seems.
I guess Shockmaster's a little too on the nose. But I do like the idea that the guy walking, who was that? Who stumbled in, like, who fell, like, basically just, like, spray-painted a torture helmet and then, like, fell in as he was going through gorilla position.
You're talking about Uncle Fred, like, my friend.
That was the guy who was Tugboat, right? He was Tugboat? Do I have that right?
Yeah. I believe so. That's pretty great. The complete disaster from beginning to end.
Nick, do you have a favorite bad gimmick?
Yeah, the worst one I've seen was, I don't know if the guy that sort of made it into, you know, big time or anything, he might have just been a developmental guy, but it was in the documentary I watched. I think it was like an MTV story about, like, I'm a pro wrestler, and they gave this guy like of, it's basically a newsboy where he would arrive, like, a day of, like, write newspapers, and that was his gimmick, and it was terrible. I'm not sure if he stuck there or if he changed, but, dear God.
Working that Newsies gimmick, brother.
Yeah.
Not exactly terrifying, you know, to be up against an old-timey newsboy.
Layla, do you have any favorite bad... I don't know how much of a wrestling fan you are at all, but do you have any memories of, like, seeing something particularly dumb on a pro wrestling show?
No, I don't watch wrestling at all.
Okay.
You guys are on your own. Sorry.
Okay.
Layla, I want to point out that you just sounded very dismissive there.
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you mean? Like, I look down on it or something?
It is a beautiful and magnificent art form.
No, I think it is. I'm just not really into it personally.
Layla,
I think
you
it's
can...
awesome to... compliment Joe and Nick's work on Ringside. I don't watch wrestling at all, but I really love Ringside, the first few issues that I've read. So, who knows? Maybe that will inspire me to actually watch the real thing.
Layla, I'm just going to tell you, unlike some of the more boorish members of the panel, that it is fine for you to not like pro wrestling. That is absolutely fine.
I mean, look, in all honesty, you're probably better off.
Chris, Chris, I'll just take this all the way around the table. Chris, do you have a favorite bad gimmick?
Oh, man, that's really tough.
I've got one in the chamber.
Okay, you go ahead. I'll see if I can think of a good one.
The Yeti! Love the Yeti.
The Yeti was a pretty bad gimmick. I mean, like, there was a gimmick in the very, very late era of WCW that I think is genius, that I don't think anybody really liked, and that was the boy band, the three count.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Like, it wasn't very well done, I will admit that, but the idea of a wrestling boy band who had a single that referenced Britney Spears and the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, like, in their entrance music. Like, it was a great idea. Like a lot of things in WCW, it was a great idea.
They had a ladder match for a gold record above the ring. All right. The next question comes from Coltrag on Twitter. He wants to know, what is the best sounding fake wrestling move name that you can come up with?
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God. I got nothing. I don't know, Nick.
I got nothing either.
I'd say it's a building garden, you know? It's good life advice, and it sounds like it might hurt. You know? Build the garden of body, like a Royal Rumble thing, perhaps? I don't know.
That should be something that Michael Cole says. Like you know how he latches onto those phrases, like create separation.
Yeah, and exactly.
Like, you know, in the way that they used to talk about, you know, when you have a bigger opponent, you gotta chop him down. Like, I wish they'd just he's really building the garden in this match, yeah, everybody. Exactly.
Maybe I
would love to see like a really elaborate, like the move involves you come out with a wheelbarrow full of soil. You have to cover the mat completely in soil, and then you have to plant your opponent into the soil, you know?
Nick, I gotta be honest, I don't like it.
I love it. Yes.
I guess we know what the fifth arc of Ringside is going to be.
I think it should be a term like take a powder. Like when you leave the ring, you take a powder. When you do what Nick just described, you build a garden. All right.
What's he doing, Maggle? Is he going to go grow a garden?
Complicated in time. The more time consuming and complicated the move is, I think, the better.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Agreed. All right. This question comes from Discord Inc. on Twitter. What are the legal rights of ghost ninjas?
Oh wow! Wait, the legal rights, as in who owns the legal rights of ghost ninjas, or what kind of citizenry do they have? Like, do they have regular laws applied to them in society? What do they mean?
I only have the information that I have.
I'm gonna assume as a citizen of the world.
Okay, Joe. Well, you created them first. What do you think?
I think they get a new start. I think they're treated as regular citizens, but I think they get it like, you know, it's like they're dead. Well, it's like, okay, well, you're dead, but now you're back. It's like, I don't know, and they're ninjas now, you know, as opposed to what they were before. Which I kind of have logic for, but I never really, kind of like, we'll probably just never get into it. But I would say like they're just treated like regular citizens, but they have like, it's like fresh start. If you like in the world of Shudder, like if you're dead and you come back, like all right, fair enough. Like that's still a pretty big deal.
Right. They get
so
bank
you
accounts?
Go around trying to kidnap people, that's still against the law.
Sure. Exactly.
Okay.
If they kidnap people, it's life. Like, okay, this, fair enough. Well, you already died. What are you supposed to do?
Let me add this sub question. Okay. Can they get bank accounts?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Hey, man, money's green.
Here's another wrestling question from Romcom Your Mom. Which wrestler has the coolest pre-ring outfit of all time, in your opinion? So, the outfit that they make the walk to the ring in.
Oh, man. I don't know. It's always got to be Macho Man, I guess. I mean, like,
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Aw.
That boa, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think we have our answer.
Anyone that has a boa, you know, that's points.
Look, I got to step up for the Nature Boy.
I was going to say, I can tell Matt is seething that you did not say Ric Flair. I can hear it. I can feel it.
He spent a lot of his personal money on those robes, let me tell you.
Oh, I bet.
Look, he can't help that he's custom made.
That's true. All right, here's one more question about Shudder. This is from the Noir Guy. He wants to know, what minor character in Shudder do you like so much that you wish they had their own book?
Ooh.
Mine's more of a world, but...
Oh!
Because, like, yeah, mine would be... Actually, It's not a spoiler. It's mentioned in the third issue, Leonis. I could do a whole book about that world. Basically, the land of cat people that we see in issue 15. Yeah, yeah, 15th out. So, yeah, that world. Actually, I kind of have an idea for a prequel book that I don't think will ever happen. But it would be like three issues, something kind of short. But I have a definite idea about like that mythology of that world and like how it came together and why there's a bunch of cat people. And I think it's too much for Shudder, but I think it could totally be its own thing.
Well, what's a minor character? Do her supporting cast count as minor characters?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, anybody but the leads.
In that case, I would love to do a short run of about Elaine. Because she's a scientist, yeah. And she has the cutest style. And I love her personality, and I find her vastly intriguing. And we've only scratched the surface.
You know what? That's a good answer, actually. We should just do that. We could. Yeah, we should just do like an Elaine special or something, or like a Elaine miniseries. That would actually be a great idea. That's a good. That's a Elaine in Leonis. It even kind of sounds phonetically good.
That wouldn't make any sense, Joe, and you know it.
Yeah, whatever. None of the rest of the book does. I think it's fine.
You're right. We'll make it work. We could definitely make it work and Shudder after all. Anything yeah, can happen.
You use your imagination in a comic mm-hmm. book.
Yes.
Sorry.
All right, that is our last Twitter question. Thanks so much to all of our guests. We've got Joe Keating, Layla Del Duca, and Nick Barber. Before we let the three of you go, please let all our listeners know where they can find you on the internet. And Layla, we'll start with you.
Well, everyone can find me on the internet if they just Google my name, which is Layla Del Duca, and it's spelled L-E-I-L-A space D-E-L space D-U-C-A, and I think I'm the only one in this land with my name, so all of my websites should pop up, including
yeah, but
Twitter.
All your usernames are all one word, right? So, like, Layla Del Duca, yeah.
Yeah, you can also just put all those letters together at .com or tumblr.com or .twitter.com, however those work. Yeah, that.
Nick,
that was really not helpful. I'm sorry.
Nick, where can everybody find you online?
Well, my name is far less unique than Layla's, so on Twitter, I am at Nick_sketch, and on Tumblr, I'm Comic Book Dojo. I'm on Instagram and stuff like that, but I don't actually have a clue what my name is on there, but you should find me. Just go to my Twitter, and yeah, that's probably the best place.
And Joe Keating, where can people find you?
Much like Layla, everything is just my name. It's a J-O-E-K-E-A-T-I-N-G-E. That E always throws everyone off at the end. It's JoeKeating.com or Twitter. I guess I do have a Facebook, Joe Keating Comics, I think, is my Facebook. I don't really update that, to be perfectly honest. I just go to Twitter or my Tumblr. I love Tumblr. Tumblr's a lot of fun. I think it's really cool.
I'm so glad we had the beeping of a truck backing up as you were backing up to remember that you had a Facebook.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm actually backing the truck up right now.
It's full, of soil so you can grow your garden.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, that has been our interview. Our guests have been Joe Keating, Layla Del Duca, and Nick Barber. Shudder is out from Image Comics. Ringside is coming soon. Look for a preview in The Walking Dead. Which issue is it?
Walking Dead 147. Yeah, October 14th.
Coming right up pretty soon. Check out a preview of it in that, and definitely pick it up when it comes out. You are not going to want to miss it. It is a really, really fun book. Thank you, all three of you, so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks once again to Joe, Nick, and Layla for stopping by. Absolute blast to talk to. And definitely go check out those comics. But for right now, Matt and I are going to shift over into doing our Word Heavyweight Champions segment, where we try to put together a list of the top 100 comic book quotes of all time.
That's right. And our list from a listener this time around comes from Andrew and Christy Marquez. They've actually sent us quite a lengthy list of quotes. I believe we've got five. So let's just try to run through them, Chris. The first one is from Batman number 680. This is attributed to Batmite. And the quote is, "The fifth dimension is imagination. Some world's greatest detective you are."
I don't know if that makes the, like, we are looking for the 100 best.
Yeah, I mean, that one's fun.
It's fun.
But I don't know that it's one of the 100 best.
I don't know if that's the 100 best quotes in Grant Morrison's run on Batman.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next one then. That one's dealt with. This one's pretty good. It's from Young Avengers number 4. Novar says it. "Come with me if you want to be awesome."
That, now that's a good one. I love Novar. I'm so glad Novar came back.
Oh yeah.
I'm so glad he's around these days.
He is not the same Novar as the one from Marvel Boy, the series, the miniseries, but
no.
The version of him that exists in Marvel continuity now, I'm a fan of. I like him.
Yeah, like it's weird because, you know, Marvel Boy is very clearly one of those books that I don't think was meant to be in continuity. Or maybe it was. You know, it's kind of hard to tell with Morrison stuff sometimes. But it certainly doesn't feel like it. It certainly feels like it should be in, like shouldn't be, because it's so weird. Because he carves cuss words into New York with laser beams, you know?
He sure does. He sure does.
But I'm glad that he came back, and I'm glad that he came back in that, in the way that he did, specifically in Young Avengers, because, you know, like, why would I not love the guy who talks about how he loves Earth solely because of the Runettes?
Yeah,
I can identify with that. That's the only thing I would save.
I mean, he's a great character, and I think this is a very good quote. Where do you think it falls?
See, that's a good one where it doesn't really, that quote could be from anything, and that quote, like, that it's from something good is nice, but that it's very universal. It's very you know, anyone could say that, I think.
So do we think it's top 50?
That's a tough one. Because we've put a lot on the list with the expectation of kind of knocking stuff off as we got towards the end.
Yeah.
So I think we might have to put it a little bit above top 50. I would not put it above number 47, though, which is Death Race 2000, I Am President Frankenstein.
Would you put it past, ahead of You Pursue Me Past Your Dying, Are You Man or Fiend from Hell?
No, but I would put it past I've Slain a Man Tonight, Not a Beast.
Okay, so you want to slot it in at number 49, above Crom Help Me, I've Slain a Man Tonight, Not a Beast. Okay, that is where that will go. The next quote from Andrew and Christie's list is one that we've already put on the list. It is, "I don't need a jetpack, all I need is hate."
Beautiful. Beautiful. How did you talk me out of putting that one at number one?
The next quote comes from The Punisher Secret Wars number one. "Gentlemen, they say when you die, you can't take it with you," which begs the question, exactly what am I going to do with all these bullets?
That was my favorite part of that comic.
It's a very good quote.
That was the favorite part of the comic that I got work out of. that quote might be my favorite thing in Secret Wars.
Despite its misuse of begs the question, it is very good.
It's true. Frank means raise the question.
Yes.
The one thing is, it's a little wordy for Frank Castle.
Yeah. It's more clever than Frank Castle tends to go. But it's really good.
For it to be him allowing himself to say something right before the world ends is like, you know, hey, I've been grim and quiet for a real long time. I'm going to go ahead and say a really clever line. I've been working on this a while. It feels like something he's been working on.
I could do a hard copy edit on this, where I cut it down to, they say you can't take it with you, so what am I going to do with all these bullets?
Well, that's great, because now Jonathan will never be on the show. you have angered Jonathan Hickman.
Listen, Hickman can take my copy edits or not. I'm just offering them.
I mean, I think it's perfect. I think, if anything, it could use more words.
Do we want to put the quote on the list? I think we do.
Yeah, I kind of do. I feel like that could go... I honestly feel like that could go right under No More Mr. Knife Guy.
Below the I Can Kill Anything quote, above the Hitman quote?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. I like that placement. The last quote on the list from Andrew and Christy is from Saga, and it is used many times. It is what Lying Cat says, and it is lying.
Okay, now this is a tough one.
Yeah.
Because that's a quote that is entirely about context. And it's always really good, but it's always based on context.
I think it goes on the list, but maybe near the bottom.
Now, we've got a number 99.
Yeah.
We've got wrestling's a sport, the only true sport, no wimpy timeouts, no padding or protection.
Yeah.
That is at number 99. I've previously said that Mogo Doesn't Socialize should go at number 100.
I'd probably put it below Sometimes I'd Like to Get My Hands on God.
I'm going to take Mogo Doesn't Socialize off the list proper, and I'm just going to install it at number 100. Okay. So that is a permanent fixture now.
Okay. And then we'll put lying in the number 80 position.
Do you want to put it in the number 80 position as it exists right now, or do you want to lock it in at 98?
I don't want to lock it in. I want to put it in the floating bottom of the list above the set bottom two.
Okay, then I will. Okay, so you want to put it? That would be in the current number 82 spot.
Oh, right, because we've added two more. You're right. So I want it to go below Sometimes I'd Like to Get My Hands on God.
Okay, so that is where it is.
Okay.
That is where it is.
Thank you, Andrew and Christy, for that list. Those were some good ones. We appreciate you sending that along. If you would like to send us a World Heavyweight Champions list, you can do so at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send Every Story Ever lists, listener questions. If you'd like to sponsor the show, you can let us know there. You can send us listener comments there. Just if you would like to get in touch with us at all, email is one of the ways to do it. Another way to do it is to go to our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. That is where you can send listener questions. You know, just get in touch. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Also, check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, that is where you will find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review there. The more positive reviews we get, the more we are featured. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson, and you will find links to all my stuff. Chris, where can everybody find your stuff?
Everybody can find links to everything I do at about.me/ChrisSims. That's ChrisSims. Check out X-Men 92 on Comixology. The first miniseries is all out, and it's all out in print now, too. That was a print comic that came out last week. Get them, I guess. The more you get them, the more they'll let me do, I guess, with Chad. I do want to say the digital versions are out, all 8 chapters, and just everybody involved in that book was really, really great to work with. Scott Koblish, Matt Miller, who was the colorist, Heather Antos, who was our assistant editor on the book, and Jordan, of course. Just absolute pleasure to work with. And I was really sad to see Scott go, but we got Alti's layouts for the first issue of the new series today, and Alti... Fermencia or Fermencia, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. She's great. she is great, so I cannot wait for you to see what she is drawing. Definitely check out X-Men 92. And that's all I got. We will be back next week with a very spooky episode. Chris Sabella calling in from the Clown Motel in Tonopah, Nevada. Until then, this has been Warrock and Ajax number 274. Have a great week, everybody.
Yeah!